people come to conferences to give 20-minute talks, and they just cram a one-hour talk into 20 minutes. And this time I have I have 1 hour. And what I did actually is the opposite. I took a 20-minute cram talk. I took some material out of it, and I'm trying to stretch it to 1 hour. So let's see how this works. Well, some of it is because tomorrow Ronen is going to give a talk about new stuff that we are doing now. And I took it out of this talk. And so you will have to come to his talk. And I'll concentrate on many-body localization and topology, and the interplay between topology and localization in a hot system. And this work was done, by the way, together with, yeah? I don't know. I think it's only recording. So this work was done together with Ronen, who's here, and with Yasmin Bachri and Ashwin Vishwanath in Berkeley. So the main point I want to ask, again, we have this edge problem. I'm talking about edge states, and my edge is missing. So, I'll try to. So you missed the C there. The question is, can a topological edge state survive at high energies? And here are examples of well-known topological states. An integer spin chain, for example. Topological insulators are symmetry-protected topological states. And in usual circumstances, the edge states are well-defined only at zero temperature. Okay? There is no meaning, sharp meaning for the edge states at finite temperature or a finite energy density in the bulk, because in this case, the bulk excitations can mix, can basically exchange quantum numbers with the edges, and then there is no protected edge anymore. Of course, this can be avoided if all excitations are somehow localized and the state is preserved. So the question I want to ask is, what is the fate of dynamics of edge states in many-body localized states? And maybe to phrase the question slightly differently, in a much maybe more general setting, suppose we have a local degree of freedom that is strongly interacting with all the rest of the degrees of freedom in a system. Can this degree of freedom retain its coherence? For example, can it serve as a qubit when it's embedded in a time-evolving system? So I have many spins, and I have my target spin, which is the qubit. And this is all set in some many-body environment, and the environment is evolving in time. And the natural answer for this is, of course, in this situation, nothing is protected because of, and one reason for that is thermalization. Once the time evolution brings you to thermalization, and we believe that many generic systems thermalize, then the qubit, all the information that is retained in the qubit is just the diagonal elements of the density matrix, basically the thermal averages. So there is no coherence left. But in this talk, I want to show that it is possible to retain coherence in a generic many-body system at arbitrarily high energy above its ground state. Okay? Is there any way to change that? Do I need to change the resolution to make it fit? Or there is maybe they...
Because they... It makes us think about the edge.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so, yeah. The outline of this talk will be... Sorry. There was also a problem yesterday. I can go to the lower resolution.
There
you
go. Yeah. Here. Yeah. No. I don't have my glasses.
Yeah, I can. the displays, and then.
Let's see, is it mirroring displays?
It's mirroring.
Well.
Oops. Maybe a resolution.
What's happening with this?
The
mouse board is. Okay.
That maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is.
Maybe now it's not working. Okay, good. Thanks. Okay. No, wait. Never mind. Okay. Well. Okay. So. And no mirroring. Okay. And you want to?
You have to stop the mirroring. So this one,
the second and the lower.
This one.
Yeah.
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 You have to stop the mirroring.
Okay.
Because it doesn't.
Oh, great! Thanks. Thanks a lot. Okay, great. So. I'm going to start by basically reviewing basic concepts of eigenstate thermalization hypothesis to understand better what is thermalization, then the breaking of ETH in localized systems. And then before going on to topological states, I want to ask maybe even a more basic question, which is whether the localized state is necessarily trivial or there is some non-trivial dynamics that could occur in the localized state, of which topological order is one possibility. That's a non-trivial state, a non-trivial many-body localized state. I'll show that indeed there are distinct many-body localized states are possible. There is a sense of dynamical order, and there could even be dynamical quantum critical points between different localized states. More details about that aspect of the dynamics will be given by Ronen tomorrow, including about the transition from a many-body localized state to a delocalized state. I'll not talk about this. I'll go on to then to the special case of topological many-body localized states. I'll show you a model with topological spin half edge states that we can actually solve exactly in some limit and then perturb around this limit to check what happens to the dynamics of the edge states. And I'll show you both general analytical results and numerics on the edge state dynamics at high energies. Okay, so start with the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. That was a hypothesis put forward by many people, probably most known is by Deutsch and Serdrinsky. And the idea is that actually it's basically another statement of equivalence of ensembles, that if I take an energy shell, and the thinnest energy shell is a single eigenstate. If I look at a single eigenstate locally, it will look completely thermal. So for example, if I take a large subsystem so that I can ignore the surface terms inside an even much larger many-body state, eigenstate, then the reduced density matrix inside this large subsystem is essentially for... looks like a thermal state. It basically looks like a finite temperature canonical ensemble. And in particular, this implies that the von Neumann entropy is extensive. It's volume. It has volume law entropy. So generically, high energy excited states with extensive energy have volume law entanglement entropy according to ETH. But of course, ETH doesn't always work. For example, an example where it doesn't work is Anderson localization of single particle states. So if I have Anderson localized system and I try to create a many-body state by just writing down a Slater determinant of these localized states, then you can imagine, it's almost obvious, that it will have just area law entanglement and not volume law, even though I can prepare any energy I want. I can prepare very high energy states. And the idea is that basically became well, at least believed now by everyone, is that such states are stable to interactions, even at very high energies. And that was actually originally, well, not in that way, but the original conjecture by Anderson that was that many body systems, closed many body systems, so it's essential that the system is closed, of course. So closed many body systems that are sufficiently disordered will fail to thermalize. And actually, Anderson, in his original localization paper, that was his main motivation. He was interested in a system of interacting spins, and he was asking the question whether, if they're not coupled to an external bath, they could serve as their own bath to thermalize. And he claimed that not, and solved the single particle localization problem as a simplification. But only recently, there were advances in understanding the true many-body system. And there were some theoretical arguments why the state is stable, the localized state is stable, and there would be a many-body mobility edge as you go to higher and higher energy. And this energy is extensive, of course. There would be a mobility edge, and there would be a transition in eigenstates between localized to thermalizing delocalized eigenstates. And this was also borne out by numerics done by Ajit Pal here and by Vadim Oganessian and David Hughes and many others. And later it was became understood that really this issue of entropy that scales as an area law or maybe with logarithmic corrections can be even a defining property of a many-body localized state in terms of the eigenstates. Okay. So these are really high-energy states, really high-energy states with extensive energy that have ground state-like entanglement properties. And if they have their stable high-energy states with ground state-like entanglement properties, maybe a lot of the physics we know from ground states, like with some modifications, like quantum phase transitions, topological order, etc., can arise also in these states and be stable. So, and that was actually, that idea was put forward in this nice paper, kind of an idea paper by David Hughes and collaborators, that basically you can protect orders at that would not be allowed at any finite energy density or finite temperature in a thermalizing system. For example, even in one dimension, you can have a transition between a broken symmetry state and a paramagnet, which you would not be possible at any finite temperature in a thermalizing system. Here it is allowed at a finite temperature or finite energy density, but it has only consequences in dynamics and not in thermodynamics. So it doesn't violate any of the theorems that do not allow broken symmetry in one dimension at finite temperature. And similarly, many-body localized state can even support topological states. However, all of this discussion is a discussion about order in eigenstates. And typically, practically, it's just impossible to prepare a system in an eigenstate. So we can't study an eigenstate and see what order it has. Even conceptually, it's not clear how you'd create an eigenstate. To create a true eigenstate of a system, you need to create something extremely non-local. So the only thing we can do is to try to study the dynamical implications starting from initial states that are much simpler. Okay, and that would be my goal here. For example, a plausible experimental protocol would be to prepare a very simple unentangled state. You'd not need any non-local operations to prepare something like that. So for example, if it's a spin model, I would like to prepare a completely classical spin state with spins pointing in particular directions. It's a product state. Then let it evolve in time with the many-body Hamiltonian and measure completely local observables like spin. So measure how the spin at a particular point evolves in time. So that would be my goal. And I want to see dynamical implications that would be actually observable in an experiment like that of eigenstate order, and in particular of topological order. So here is a simpler example that Ronen will talk about in much more detail in his talk tomorrow. So suppose we have an Ising model. This is a transverse field Ising model with disordered parameters. And I added more terms, for example, like sigma x interactions and maybe sigma y and more. such terms that would not that would make this model non-integrable in a way that you cannot map it to non-interacting fermions. Okay, so let's take a model like that and now evolve it in time and measure measure the local spin. So of course, in this system, the SZ component of the spin is not a conserved quantity. There is no global conservation law and no immediate local conservation law of spin. So naively, you would expect that the spin would also always decay to zero if you take the if you start with the state and let it evolve in time. However, one finds that, and you can show it very nicely in comes out very naturally in our in renormalization group framework that Ronen will talk about, that if you take the system to have sufficiently large J compared to H, sufficiently large eigencoupling, it goes to a phase where the spin actually decays to a finite value and saturates even at infinite time, at least in a thermodynamic system where it's sharp. So that infinite time limit of the local spin is an order parameter of a phase that you can say it's a glass phase where the spin does not decay. And that is possible just because of many-body localization. It's possible even in one dimension. And the fact that the spin does not decay to zero, it means that sigma z's are, if they're not really exact conserved quantities, there are some kind of emergent conserved quantity, and that's why they're not decaying. Or another way to say it, they have some non-vanishing overlap with true conserved quantities. So here it's actually nice to go to this framework that Dima Abedin and Zlatko and Serbin talked about, and at the same time Vadim and David Hughes, to rewrite a model like the Ising model in terms of its conserved quantities. And there are two limits where we know the conserved quantities exactly. So for example, if I have only transverse fields, then my conserved quantities are the sigma x spins. If I have only the eigencoupling, for example, this is apparent Hamiltonian for a localized state where sigma z's are conserved quantities. And they're conserved quantities that break the intrinsic z2 symmetry of this model. And that's why this phase with such conserved quantities will be a broken symmetry state. So for example, if this is my this transverse field only Hamiltonian is my parent Hamiltonian, then sigma x is the conserved quantity. If I turn on the other interactions, the conjecture is that if, as long as I'm in the many-body localized state, the true conserved quantities are quasi-local in the sense that they still have a strong overlap, z, with the original conserved quantity, which is strictly local, plus an exponential tail, meaning there are some strings of two, three, four, five operators, but the coefficients of these terms decay exponentially with the number of spins involved in these terms. So the tail is actually exponential and it decays with some characteristic length scale, which we'll call localization length. And in the same way, you can do in the glass phase, these strictly local conserved quantities transform to quasi-local conserved quantities plus an exponential tail. So one important thing to note that will be important for my discussion of topological phase is that these conserved quantities can be said to be in some sense classical conserved quantities. Why are they classical conserved quantities? Because sigma z is conserved, but the conjugate variable sigma x is not a conserved quantity. At the same time, we have either sigma z or sigma x as a conserved quantity and not both of them. So really, at least naively, we cannot protect quantum information in this. We might be able to protect quantum information if we do some operations to retrieve the coherence later, but really we cannot, if we don't do anything else, then we cannot conserve both the x and the z direction of the spin at the same time because they're not conserved quantities. Okay, so they cannot serve as protected quantum bits. What we need are local conserved quantities which can serve as quantum bits, at least even without any operation done on them. Or at least that's what I want to show can be done. And this brings me back to the question of whether a local degree of freedom can retain its coherence without doing anything, just stay there in a many-body system. And it brings me to the question of topology protected bits. So just a short digression to symmetry protected topological states, and I want to first convey the usual ground state picture of symmetry protected states like that. And the simplest example of a symmetry protected state, topological state, is the Haldane spin one chain. And for example, we can actually even have an exactly solvable point called the AKLT model, where the ground state is exactly known, and it's built out of some symmetrized singlets between spin halves that make up the spin ones, and the edge states are free spin half excitations. Yes?
So, sorry, quick question about what you just said. So sigma x and sigma z, if they are both conserved quantities, it means that there is no Hamiltonian.
Yes, for the edge.
That's what you want.
Right, yes. Yeah, that's right. So for these degrees of freedom, there is no Hamiltonian and they will be completely preserved.
Yeah,
right. Yes. Yeah, the Hamiltonian for these degrees of freedom is zero. Although all the spins interact with each other, but there is some kind of emergent composite degree of freedom that has a zero Hamiltonian. Yes.
But even in the paramagnetic case, expectation of sigma x is not zero. It won't be even in the excited. It's not in the ground state, it's not in the excited state. There is a residual
sigma x. It's true, but it doesn't have a zero Hamiltonian. Yeah, but that's true. Yes. So sigma x has a. It has a residual. That's right. Yes. Yeah, but it's a good point. But it doesn't have a zero Hamiltonian, so maybe that's the sharp thing to say. Thanks. So these spin half edge states are understood in the modern understanding of these spin half edge states. Starting from papers by Frank Polman and Erez Berg and collaborators. And then elaborated for 1D and higher dimensions by Zhao Gang and Gu and Shen. The modern understanding is that if you have some symmetry, then if the edge states transform non-trivially under a symmetry, basically that symmetry is realized in a projective way on the edge, then you have a topological phase and it protects the edge states because you cannot bring a constituent from the bulk, which always transforms under a linear representation of the same symmetry. You cannot bring it to the edge. If you bring it to the edge, it remains in a projective representation. So here in this example, the microscopic, we have SU2 symmetry. Of course, we know now that we can live with a much lower symmetry to protect this edge. But in this example, it's easy to think of SU2 symmetry. The constituents transform like spin ones. Spin one of SU2 or SO3, while the edge states transform as spin half, which is a projective representation of SO3. So I cannot bring any excitation from the bulk and change the edge to a non-projective representation. And that's what protects this edge. Okay, so again, as I said before, then there is a generalization to two-dimensional systems, and a simple example is topological insulators, which are protected by U1 symmetry and time reversal, and there are other types of topological insulators. And SPT phase is protected by all sorts of symmetries. But normally, the edge states are well-defined only at T equals zero. And at finite temperature, there is some finite density of excitations that can mix with the edge, as I said before. But this can be avoided if all excitations are localized. And then the question is whether we can find models which have a topological character even at very, very high energies, and what are the dynamical implications. So this is my main goal. And what I'll do now is I'll describe a specific model, which is in a sense universal. It's generic. It's a very generic model with Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. And I want to study its dynamics. So the model, this is the model. It has a transverse field in general. It has SX-SX interactions. And it doesn't have SZ-SZ interaction for a reason that I'll say in a moment. But it has another transverse field-like term. So sigma x, you see both in this term and in this term. But this transverse field term is also dressed by sigma z spins on both sides. So it's a three-spin interaction term. So this is the model. And I'll claim in a minute that actually it has two phases. It has a topological phase, and it has a trivial paramagnetic phase. So when this usual transverse field term is dominant, it's a trivial paramagnet. And when this three-spin interaction term is dominant, it will have a topological phase. And the reason why I need this V, this interaction, is because without this interaction, the model can be mapped to free fermions. And again, it's non-generic. And things will be different in a way that I will explain later, how the dynamics will become different when I turn off this V that makes the model more generic. I'm worried about the symmetry in this model. The Ising model I showed before has a Z2 symmetry associated with flipping all the SZ spins to minus SZ. And this model has a Z2 cross Z2 symmetry because I can independently flip all the odd spins, or I can flip all the even spins. And this model has because of the special structure of SZ, and then which occurs only every other spin, I have this symmetry of flipping only odd spins or only even spins. Okay, so it's two Z2 symmetries. Okay, so now why do I say that this state has a topological state? Sometimes the idealized model that has only this three-spin interaction is called the cluster model. And here is the cluster model with some disordered couplings, lambda I. The reason it's called the cluster model is because actually it's exactly solvable, and the exact eigenstates of this model are states that are called cluster states. These operators k, which are just these three spin interaction terms, turn out to commute with each other. All of them commute with each other. You can easily see that, although they overlap in space, they overlap with two sigma matrices which anti-commute, so or they commute with one which commute with each other, which is the same sigma that commutes. So they all commute with each other, although they overlap. So since they all commute with each other, I can basically write all the eigenstates as the mutual eigenstates of all these eigenvalues of the k operators. Each one of them is plus or minus one. So here are all the eigenstates, just plus one, plus or minus one in the first k to the last k. So this is kn. Kn, by the way, is the k operator centered on the last spin, which means it also has a component on the first spin. Okay, and k1 is centered on the first spin and has a component on the last spin. So the k operators have periodic boundary conditions. But if I put my system on open boundary conditions, then you immediately see that the energies actually depend only on k2 up to kn minus 1. So there are two k operators that are missing in the specification of the energy, which means that the energy is fourfold degenerate. All the spectrum is fourfold degenerate. Okay, and now I can ask the question, and this state, another thing you can easily check is that this state, of course, doesn't break the Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. And now you can ask the question, how do these four states transform into each other by the symmetry generators? Okay, so in fact, you can construct the local operators that transform between them. And I'll construct them for you. So here they are on the left edge. And similarly, you can do exactly the same thing on the right edge. So on the left edge, I have a capital sigma x and y, which are products of the two first spins, sigma 1, sigma 2. Sigma x1, sigma z2, for example, is big sigma x. And big sigma z is just sigma z1 cross the identity on the second spin. So you see, these are composite spin operators that actually obey a spin half algebra, and they transform between the states. Okay, so actually, this immediately tells you that the transformation between these states is a spin half, has a spin half like representation of z2 cross z2. It's an anti-commuting representation of z2 cross z2, which is an abelian group. It must be a projective representation of z2 cross z2. So this is the reason why this, why this is topological. And I will claim from numerics and for general arguments of many body localization that nothing will change of this structure when I add the generic terms, the other generic interaction terms. And the reason basically is that these truly local conserved quantities will just continuously transform into quasi-local conserved quantities, but you cannot change the commutation relations from anti-commuting to commuting without undergoing a phase transition. So you cannot directly go from anti-commuting to commuting, so you'll stay in a topological state. So before going into that, I want to show some bulk, before going into the edge, some bulk properties or diagnostics of the topological state. So there are two bulk diagnostics you can check. One is string order. So this state actually has string order, and you can take a very high energy state and see that it has string order, this kind of string order, and apply also the various generic interactions and see that the string order survives. Or what is similar, you can look at the entanglement spectrum. You can put the system on periodic boundary conditions and look at the entanglement spectrum of half the system. Basically, take the reduced density matrix of half the system and look at the eigenstates of the log of the eigenstates of the reduced density matrix. And what you find in the topological phase is that they have fourfold degeneracy. And the reason why it's destroyed it high entanglement energy states is because of finite size effect. And if you go to larger sizes, you see it better and better up to higher entanglement states. So the entanglement in the topological state, you have exact degeneracy of the entanglement spectrum, fourfold degeneracy. And in the trivial state, you have no such degeneracies. Okay, so this is a bulk probe. But from now on, I want to discuss the edge dynamics. So in order to understand the edge dynamics, I want to take this phenomenological picture of the many-body localized state using conserved quantities. In this case, our conserved quantities consist of all the K operators in the bulk that I told you about and the sigma operators, which describe the edge spin. Okay, so the three sigma left operators and sigma right operators in the right edge. And now when I turn on the generic interactions, the assumption is that they just transform smoothly into quasi-local operators. So the operator k tilde becomes ki times z tilde plus some exponential tail. And similarly for the edge. So if you before had an edge bulk separation, now you have an edge tilde bulk tilde separation. So the edge is no longer sharp. It's not consisting of just two spins, but it consists of some wave function that decays into the bulk, but that's all, okay? And z2 cross z2 symmetry is still realized projectively on the edge because these operators cannot suddenly change the representation from projective to linear. And again, I want to mention that the fact that this sigma operator is a true quantum integral of motion, okay, in the sense that you mentioned that it has zero Hamiltonian. So there is no, both sigma x and sigma z are conserved exactly in the same way. They're totally conserved. Okay, so now the first thing I want to show you is that if I start my spin in any direction, in sigma x, in sigma z, or in sigma y, it will persist to very, very long times, never mind which direction I put it in. And the way I can see it is by rewriting the spin in terms of the exact conserved quantities. So this is the local spin. That's the only thing I can really observe in experiment is the local spin. And the local spin can be written in terms of the true conserved quantity, which is not exactly local, plus some tail, which includes a bulk edge coupling. Because now this sigma is not strictly edge. It has a coupling between bulk and edge. So it has some bulk component too. So this part of the spin is not protected. So if I take the expectation value, I start it from the expectation value starts as 1. After some time, the system decays, and this thing has 0 expectation value after a very short time, while this part retains its original expectation value, which is actually z tilde times 1. So in the end, you are left with a finite expectation value, never mind what is your direction, x, y, or z. So this is the fact that this edge spin retains a degree of coherence, not perfect coherence, because there is a part that decays, but it retains a degree of coherence even after infinitely long time. And I want to show how this is borne out by numerics. So what we do is we test this by starting with a very simple initial state. One simple initial state would be all spins up, all local spins up. And that, if you test what is the edge spin, this truly local conserved quantity, it's not a true conserved quantity, but it's a strictly local conserved quantity, it's a strictly local quantity, sigma z starts as 1. And now you ask what happens with it, whether it will decay or not. Or you can actually start the spins like this with all spins up and the last spin in the x direction. And that will start it off with this local quantity, edge quantity as 1. And now you can ask whether it will decay to 0 or not. And what you find is that in both cases, it quickly decays from 1 to some residual value. And then you have a very, very slow decay. And I'll talk about this slow decay in a minute. But if you take just a representative bulk spin, you see that it immediately decays to 0 completely. Okay, so that's the difference between the edge and the bulk. But now you can ask whether this slow relaxation that you see here is actually a sign that there is no true many-body localization, or this is a finite size effect. And I claim, and I want to prove to you that this is a finite size effect. And the idea is that because we have a finite size chain, there are 2 degrees of freedom, not only the left edge, there is also the right edge, and they interact with each other. Not only do they interact with each other, actually there is a huge number of interaction terms that we can write down, because we can write down interaction terms that involve any string of operators through the bulk. In fact, that's a huge difference between the generic system that has interacting fermions that can be mapped only to interacting fermions and the non-generic system that has non-interacting fermions. Actually, if you write this system in terms of non-interacting fermions, then these edge spins correspond to a pair of Majoranas in each side. Okay, and the only interaction terms that are allowed are quadratic interaction terms, and you're constrained by symmetry. And in the end, you can see that you have only 2 independent interaction terms that are quadratic from side to side. So what you expect to see if you see, when you look at one realization, what you expect to see is not decay, actually, but some oscillations at a frequency that grows exponentially bigger with the system size. But in an interacting system, you expect to see oscillations at essentially all frequencies, and therefore you'll see all frequencies within a window that is exponentially small in the system size. So you expect to see a decay over a time scale that grows with system size. Yes?
But the decay is due to disorder averaging? All frequencies?
Yeah, so here, no. Actually, if you look at the system, which is interacting, you'll see a decay even without this order averaging. Actually, I don't have plots of this here, but this is very nice. So if you do a simulation for a system that can be mapped to non-interacting fermions, you don't see a decay in one realization. You just see oscillations. While if you do it in an interacting system, you see a decay because there is immediate dephasing. So there is a big difference. And here, actually, because I want to see very smooth, you see a decay, but because it's not a very long system, the decay is kind of noisy. And to see these very smooth curves, we did disorder averaging. Okay? So what you see here is 6 to 11 sites, and you see that the decay of the spin for 6 sites is very fast, for 11 sites is very slow. And if you look at the time scale, you see that it grows exponentially with the system size. Okay, so this is the first, yes?
Is there a huge, like, jump down at near time zero, at the expectation value?
It started at 1, and I just, at this time scale, you cannot resolve it, but there is a very fast decay at the scale of basically the microscopic scale. So order 1, there is a very fast decay from 1 to this scale. And then there is a very slow decay due to the coupling with the edge. Yes. Right. It all starts in 1 here. Good point. Oops, what happened here? Never mind. Okay. So now I want to ask a slightly different question. So far it was whether the edge spin survived or retained some memory of its initial state, no matter where it was pointing. And that I showed you. Now the question is, can I manipulate the edge coherently? And in order to manipulate the edge coherently, I want to apply some field at the edge. And my field, by the rules I've set for myself, has to be local. So it has to couple not to the true conserved quantity, but to the local quantity sigma z that would have been there if I didn't add the interactions. Okay. So that means it couples to some. It couples to the true conserved quantity, but it also creates some edge bulk coupling. And another way to say it is that this field necessarily breaks the protecting Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. So now my qubit is not supposed to be protected. So the question is whether I can still correct and retrieve coherence that will be lost due to the fact that I broke my my protecting symmetry. So. Okay, so first thing I show you is numerics that shows exactly what you expect, that you see fast oscillations. These are the Rabeau. So I start this, the way I do it is I put a field in the z direction. I start the spin in the x direction, the edge spin in the x direction. And then you expect to see Rabeau oscillations, which is exactly what you see. But because of these terms, these oscillations decay, are dephased and decay, and they decay at a time scale that's independent of system size. Okay, the time scale depends on g and on how far you are from this integrable point, but it's really not dependent on system size. So we see decay of coherence, but the question is whether this loss of coherence is reversible or irreversible. Can we completely retrieve it or not by applying strictly local operations? And what I want to argue is that it's reversible. We can retrieve it. And here is the ECHO protocol. It's not the standard ECHO protocol, but it's one that's actually easy to explain here. I think with a standard ECHO protocol, maybe with slightly less fidelity, you can also retrieve coherence. But this is the protocol I will use. So I evolved my system. So there is Bloch oscillations of the spin for some time because I applied this field, local field G. And at some time T reversal, I will flip the field G to minus G and let the system evolve with the Hamiltonian, including minus G. Of course, this doesn't flip time completely. It just flips time for one spin. And this spin is not even a true conserved quantity. So the question is whether this will actually retrieve the coherence in high fidelity. And I want to show you how to, so I want to now prove to you that if the system is many body localized, it will retrieve the coherence. And actually the proof will show also what it will be somewhat constructive. So you'll see what determines this residual coherence and how it can be lost. Okay, so let me go have about 5-10 minutes or 10 minutes. Okay, so I think I can make it. I managed to stretch to an hour. It's impressive. Yeah, so.
For the Fitoan, so really alpha L is how the K constant grows.
Yeah,
yeah.
How
does that compare to the recurrence time? So what is alpha there?
But recurrence I didn't talk about yet, but it turns out to be exactly the same. Yeah, but that's, I don't know, I don't have an analytic result for this, but numerically it's the same constant.
So alpha is set locally by local entropy density.
I think so, yes. Yeah, it's a good point. It turns out to be exactly the same, right? I'll show you a graph later. So the recurrence also gets worse if the system is smaller, and there is a, yeah. So, okay, but let me show you, first of all, I want to, before thinking of finite system, let's look at a semi-infinite system. I have an edge and semi-infinite system and ask, what is the how much of the coherence is retrieved? So here is my the way the preliminaries I want to set. There, what is my basis? It's very easy to work in the basis state of the system with the field. Okay, so the system with the field has the bulk conserved quantities kappa tilde with field, which are different from the bulk conserved quantities without the field. It's easy to work with this basis first. And the other conserved quantity I will need is the remaining conserved quantity sigma z that's associated with sigma z at the edge. Okay, so these are the quantum numbers of the state. In this representation, I want to make a simplification just for the presentation here. As an initial state, I'll take an eigenstate of sigma x tilde and not of sigma x. Okay. In principle, I want to take a sigma x eigenstate, and it will not be very different. I'll maybe explain in the end how there is a trivial thing you can do to start with a sigma x. But for the presentation purposes, let me start with a sigma x tilde eigenstate. And that's very simple to write down, at least. Okay, it's very simple to write down because it's just this superposition of all the states with some weights. And the weight is independent of sigma because you want equal superposition of up and down to create a sigma x eigenstate. Okay, now you evolve the system up to the reversal time with this Hamiltonian. And this is how it evolves. And these are the eigenstates. Because these are the eigenstates, these are just the energies associated with them at finite g. There is g here that I forgot. Okay. Okay, now the most crucial point. Now we have a time tr, we want to reverse the field from plus g to minus g. This is like a quench, okay? It's a sudden quench of a Hamiltonian. So we know the state we've ended up with, but now it has to evolve with a different Hamiltonian where g goes to minus g. Now in principle, there would be something like an orthogonality catastrophe because now we want to evolve. The evolution is simple in terms of the states of the final Hamiltonian. So I want to now transform from the states of minus g to the states from with plus g to the states with minus g. So there is a basis change involved. Okay, so here is the basis change. And the important part of the basis change would be the overlap between the old states with the same quantum numbers, but minus g. Okay, and because of many-body localization, I can smoothly go from the quantum numbers sigma and alpha at plus g to the quantum numbers sigma alpha at minus g. And that would be the important part of the quench. There would be some components that are small and are not going to be retrieved completely from the other part of the basis. So this overlap. So how do you write this overlap? This overlap is what would usually give you an orthogonality catastrophe. The point here is that when I make a change g, it's a local change only at the edge. And because the system is localized, this will affect only the degrees of freedom up to a depth xi from the edge, not all the degrees of freedom in the system. And therefore, so even if you don't want to go through this because I don't have so much time, you'll see, you can believe me that This factor is exponentially small, and you can show it. It's exponentially small in the localization length. So e to the minus g squared times psi over the lattice constant, so times some function of v and h, which actually goes to zero when this h and v go to zero. Doesn't matter so much. So the scaling is exponential with the localization length psi. So you have this number, and by symmetry, you can also see that z sigma is z minus sigma star, conjugate of z minus sigma. So that's also something I'll use. Okay, so now we are ready to do the evolution. We evolved it up to time t reversal. Now we want to evolve for the final time to t2 reversal. So we use the new basis minus g. And that gives us a suppression factor due to the near orthogonality catastrophe, but incomplete orthogonality catastrophe. This is this part. And now we need to use the energies of minus g rather than the energies g. Okay. So what does this give us? Actually, because of symmetry, so let's expand these energies in sigma and g. So because of the Z2 symmetry we have, that g breaks, then this expansion has to look like this. So every time I have a G, I have to have a sigma to restore the symmetry. So actually, I can always write it as a symmetric part and an anti-symmetric part E plus, which is a function of only alpha and G squared, E minus a function of alpha and G squared, while E minus is times sigma G. Okay, I can always write it in this way by symmetry, and then when I have the sum of these two, I only remain with E plus. So you see, nothing here depends on sigma. And also the Z I showed you before. I have to convert back to the original plus basis. And therefore, I get another factor of Z star, another orthogonality catastrophe, because I want to convert back to my original basis. And that's exactly the same orthogonality catastrophe, only Z. You see that here nothing depends on alpha because the absolute value of z, as I showed you before, doesn't depend on sigma, on whether you're up or down in the edge. All this doesn't depend on sigma. So actually now if I want to calculate sigma x, what I get is sigma x tilde, that doesn't matter so much, is this average over the orthogonality, what's left of the orthogonality catastrophe. So you see that the end result is exponentially small in the localization length and goes to zero only when the localization length diverges. So really the spin echo is like an order parameter for the phase. When either you go out of the topological phase so that the edge localization length grows to infinity, or you go out of the many-body localized phase that the total localization length diverges, then this spin echo decays to zero. Okay? Yes?
So what is special about the edge state? Because, for example, if you do spin echo
good
in the bulk, right, it shows you.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very good question. So I actually was going to say exactly this. So I think there is nothing special, because the only special thing is that I could use a slightly different algorithm for the protocol for the revival. But I think this revival of the echo is something that is special to a many-body localized state, but not special to a topological state. So actually, I was going to say that by putting on this field, I really went out of the topological phase. And I'm already in a usual many-body localized state. And in principle, I can still revive this spin using a more conventional, actually, even. But the fact that I could use this G to minus G protocol had to do with the symmetry associated with the edge. But I think the general thing is right, that really when you have a many-body localized state, you can use it as a quantum memory if you do a retrieval of coherence. What is stronger about the topological phase is that you have a qubit which has a zero Hamiltonian. So even without doing any spin echo, it's retained as a fully coherent spin. Just a second. And suppose I have many qubits now. I can now entangle it with other qubits, and I don't have to do anything, and that quantum memory will persist. On the other hand, in a usual many-body localized state, if I entangle many qubits, I don't know if I have a protocol that can restore this coherence with spin echo. So with one spin, I can restore. But here, in the topological state, I can actually entangle many spins, and I don't need to do any protocol for restoration. Yes.
The difference between some, the trivial phase where some k or bulk hyperbolic motion is localized on the edge, and this one is the fact that the, this couldn't interact with the other integrals of motion.
Yes.
In the bulk.
Yes. It does not interact with the other integrals of motion in the bulk. So at zeroth order, I don't, not even at zeroth order, if I don't apply any fields, if I don't do any manipulations, I have protection. If I apply manipulations, I'll start to have to do corrections. But before
that's
doing,
where you can tell the difference between this.
Yes, it's
trivial
and the topological. Yes. Okay, and I'm basically done. I just want to show you how this is borne out in numerics. So here is an example of such an echo. So I start with all spins up here, and I apply a field in the x direction, I think, and you see oscillations decaying, and at this time, I do the reversal, and then you see the oscillations come back up, and to show you, convince you that it is the same oscillations, I just mirror, I fold this back onto itself to show you that the oscillations actually retrace almost completely. And now you can ask how exactly your question, how does this echo degrade as I go to longer and longer reversal times? And what I get is, this is what we call T2 time here. The T2 time are the blue dots, and you see that they behave exactly like the T0 time, which is the time I showed you before for just degrading of the spin with zero field. They're the same, and they go by the same exponent. And I don't know why there is this even odd effect in the chain. And this is the T2 star time, which is without doing the retrieval operation, just the decay of the envelope, you see that's completely independent of system size, okay, as expected. So everything is perfectly borne out in the numerics, all these expectations. So, oops. Oh, now I don't know how to. So, I think I, why did it stop it? Okay, so just to summarize, I am back to the beginning. Yeah, okay, so to summarize, I showed you that many-body localized states can be topological. Topology and localization then combine to protect quantum edge states at high energies. Actually, questions are whether there are simpler realizations for this using only two-spin interactions and not this complicated three-spin interaction model, because in fact, this result is universal. It, as long as you manage to get your system into a Z2 cross Z2 topological state, and I think one answer to this has been given already numerically, at least by Anushya and her collaborators. They showed that there is a spin one model with no spin, three-spin interactions, where this seems to be also the case. There, I don't think there is an exactly solvable point, so it's a bit less, it's not as easy to show that convincingly that it works, but I think it's probably working there. So simpler realizations that can be done in cold atom experiments, for example, and then maybe even more exciting thing would be to have a two or three dimensional analog where if you want the analogs of the qubits will be defects in this topological state. Maybe bulk defects could hold the qubit that's protected even at very high energy densities. And I want to also advertise Ronen's talk where he'll talk about dynamics of the transition between the many-body localized state to the delocalized state tomorrow. There are some interesting new results on this. Okay, thank you.
Yes. I wonder in these echo experiments, if you have some mixed state, some ensemble of many-body states, close energy, whether this decay and recovery still works.
Oh, if the initial state is, wait, even the edge state I want to be cold, but
okay.
Because the edge state is not hard to make it cold, but you just measure it. It's a good question, but yes, I think everything I said is completely general to mixed state. If I have the bulk in a mixed state, it will still completely work, as long as the edge is in a pure state. So at least if the edge, this local, exactly local edge operator
So if one has a large enough system and it sort of breaks up into, there may be some rare there may be edge states within the system in some sense, if it's sort of local. So there may be multiple, having these weak links at some points. They will maybe produce decoherence at you may not really need a boundary to have many of these.
Sure.
And maybe one may be able to sort of get the coherence. Possible to sort of utilize in some way?
Let me answer it in two stages. One is, you're absolutely right that basically if you think of how the transition will occur from the topological state to the trivial state, it actually exactly occurs in this way. This is basically like a strong randomness, infinite randomness transition, where you can think of these edge states in the bulk as having, they're all scales. At the transition, there will be all scales of distances between them, and there'll be bonds created, and this would be sort of like a random singlet phase at the critical point. If you're before the critical point, there'll be some finite distance between them, characteristic distance, which would be a localization length, or you can say it's a coherence length. And that will be everything I did here, that will come out as a different localization length. Instead of being just two-site localization length or four-site localization length, it will be more and more larger and larger localization length, and that will suppress the echo more and more. In the end, it will simply serve to suppress the echo, and you can think of that as the effect of the interaction with all these bulk, low energy bulk degrees of freedom, or low frequency bulk degrees of freedom. But the end effect will be like that. It will be if you know exactly where these degrees of freedom are, then you can start to entangle them and use them as a memory, but you know that what then will control the time scale on which you can store this memory is the localization length. So if you want to use them, these states, there'll be some finite decay time associated with it.
Yeah. Any other questions?
So we have an example of fractional quantum Hall effect, right, where we know that, you know, at finite temperature, right, or if you double the system literally away from the center of the plateau, right, edge states survive.
Because you just create a lattice of quasi-particles or something.
It could be also just localized. Right?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But I guess there it's not so, it's not true protection of finite temperature, but the question is why, right? So
it's not finite temperature, it's zero temperature, but doping. Because there is localization at zero temperature, you can localize. Okay. You say because you create a finite number of these excitations.
Right. Let's say if we dope it a little bit and temperature is small but not zero, right? So we know that edge states survive.
Right.
Well,
yes.
Sort of survive up to some exponentially small, right?
And that's probably because of zero temperature localization of the quasi-particles, right? This has to do with the fact that you're at zero temperature and there is some localization of the quasi-particles at zero temperature, I guess. And that protects you from the finite density of quasi-particles. But you're still in a ground state, right? If I neglect temperature for a minute, you're just in a, and the ground state is away from the, from quantum, the perfect fraction of quantum Hall state, but I guess it's because of localization of quasi-particles in the ground state. Maybe it's, but it's maybe a similar thing, just in the ground state, I think, right? At least what I, if you turn on temperature here, then there would, it would not be sharp, right? Unless there is many body localization.
Right. But I was just wondering, so, well there's a lot of data on fractional what we call at finite temperature, right? And of course, there's implication of phonons and so on, right. But whether one could put some constraints, right, from this data on how vertical particles can delocalize, right, due to interaction.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
Interesting. Well, it would be also interesting if you could, even if there is no full many-body localization, maybe there is just in this quasi-particle space some near many-body localization, because they don't interact with anything except for the edge states. So maybe you can see such effects even there. I don't know. Yeah. Statistics, you mean?
Because if they're anions.
Many body localization of anions.
Yeah.
I don't know. Interesting. Well, you looked at things like that, right? Or not on anions? Okay.
So I think we'll have to take a break, but before that, let's thank the speaker again.